So now somebody's coming in to fix the AC, and guys are coming in to put heat in my room. I'm yeah. from Florida, and it's frigid.
It's guys. It's our amazing equipment manager.
Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals. From the bowels of Union Station in Kansas City, Missouri. Evan, how do you like our vacant room accommodations?
I mean, I can't think of a better place to really engage our chemistry on mic in a space like this.
That's right. Nothing says Kansas City like a room that could be a room anywhere.
No shade to the Midwest.
But well, I love
we
it.
We are very excited to be here in Kansas City for the NWSL Championship and a very special bonus episode on Main Feed for you today. Involves our conversation with Orlando Pride VP and GM Haley Carter. We got into all kinds of stuff about how the team has evolved since she became GM and what to expect on Saturday. So go ahead and give a listen to Haley Carter.
This is a very exciting thing that we're doing because this is the first GM that we've ever gotten to interview. And yeah. we're doing it in Kansas City on the heels of the NWSL Championship. So welcome, Haley Carter.
Yeah. yeah. Thanks for having me. Everyone, we're doing it in my hotel room, too, because yeah. I'm cool, hip, cool.
Let's really paint a picture.
Important.
And we've been warned there would be no heat in here.
There,
and
it's,
yet
it's so
turned
chilly.
On.
Listen, it says it's a 65 in here, guys. 65.
Yeah, just brisk 65.
Listen, I'm from New England. I can handle this better than
yeah.
just about
I feel great.
So, I have noticed a theme that conversations you've had recently.
Yeah.
that a lot of people want to know what changed this year. I want to know, to take you back to January of 2023 when you got this job.
Yeah.
And looking back on the last 2 years, what didn't you have to change about this club?
Oh, you're going to hit me with like a double negative there, man. you know, I came in and I was really fortunate in that ownership and club management had made a lot of personnel changes before I came in. So we had, obviously, Seb was named interim. We had hired Corey Price as our director of medical and performance. We had made some changes on equipment side, GM side, team ops. Like there, the ownership had made some changes before I came in. And then we had a vision when I came in about how we wanted to build out from there and, you know, having a scouting and analytics department and those types of things. I would say I think the best thing that ownership could have done was making Seb Hines the head coach. And I think when a GM comes into an environment and the head coach has already been selected, I think if you allow there to be this sort of weird dynamic on, well, I didn't choose you to be the head coach and right. you didn't choose me really to work with as GM, but he did. I mean, it was part of the interview process. So thanks for that. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. But I think there can be a weird dynamic. And for us, that I think both of us went into it consciously avoiding that. And for me, like knowing and having been a coach and having worked in the space for a long time, like it's his first role as a head coach, and it's at the highest level of the women's game in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so he was going to need the grace and the space to learn and grow, and he was going to need to show up with the mindset that he was going to learn and grow. And I think both of those things has sort of created the path that we've followed to get to where we're at now. And I think that is probably the one thing that I would say that, you know, we didn't have to change. Like we came in 2023 ready to work together. We had a serious alignment in the vision and how we wanted to get there, how we wanted to build a culture, how we wanted to build a roster. And we knew that it was going to take time. And we're successful this season, but it still took several transfer windows to get us here. It took several decisions to get us here. But I think that I'm so thankful and so proud of Seb and, you know, happy that ownership gave him the opportunity because he's someone who has really taken it and done really, really well with it. And it's because he's so humble. It's because he's so growth-minded. He's so open to feedback. He surrounds himself with really good people and he listens to those people. And so it's a lot of fun to work with him.
Over the time that you've been working with Seb, where have you seen
his greatest area of growth? And for yourself as a GM, where do you feel like you've grown the most?
So for Seb, I think the most growth and improvement that I've seen with him is learning how to meet players where they're at and understanding that influencing and getting the most out of each athlete, everything has to be individualized. And he is very good at creating a space where players can come in and have conversations with him, and how he interacts with each one of them is a little bit different. And how he communicates with them on the field, off the field, in the office, he's gotten better and better as we've gone along, like in understanding the players and learning the players. And like I said, it's been a lot of fun to watch how he's gotten better at conflict. You know, Seb's not a person that craves conflict. He avoids it like the plague. But we have worked together to create an environment where we can have healthy conflict and disagreements with each other. And that's true of everyone, right? Like we get feedback and involve a lot of people in decisions and, you know, how we want to go about doing things. And sometimes Seb and I get to just make decisions. Sometimes I get to just make decisions. But we've created an environment, and that's thanks to his willingness. You know, sometimes I have to like grab his hand and pull him into a hard conversation, but his willingness to show up and speak his perspective and give space to others to speak their perspective, I think, has been a key to our success and something that he's improved over the last couple of years. And then I think for myself too, just I have a tendency, because I was a coach and because I was a player, like wanting to veer into the technical space. And Seb and I very early on set boundaries of, if you feel like I'm veering too much into your space, you say something. And if I feel like you're veering too much into my space, I'll say something. And it's actually created a dynamic where like we value one or the other coming a little bit into the other space when the time is right, because we are so very different, the two of us. He is so mild-mannered and so mindful and demure. Okay.
Very English.
And yes, very English.
First of all, I want to say, the way that he jaws at fourth officials sometimes, you'd never know this.
That's true. And I actually get to see that side of him sometimes, which is fun. But he is just, you know, his boiling point is a lot higher than my boiling point is. And then once I've made a decision, like I'm ready to act. And he will want to delay on things. And so we kind of balance each other out on it. So I will have an opinion. I will be a very strong opinion, and he will slow burn it with me. So, but I think for me, like being able to show up for him and for the staff and make sure that they get what they need, like that's probably been my biggest learning point in all of this. You know, I think folks look at GMs and think, oh, it's all about like roster construction and contract negotiations. And like, that is such a small fraction. It's a very important fraction of what I do, but it is such a small percentage of how we spend our time. Like everything, the vast majority of my time is spent on making sure that the staff, that Seb, that the athletes, they have what they need to be successful. They have the resources that they need. They have the space that they need to be successful. They're getting the grace that they need. They're getting the support that they need. And so I think one of my biggest learning points and areas of growth is just like focusing on that and realizing like it's not, and we've said this before, but like really operationalizing, it's not about the wins and the losses. Mm-hmm. It's about doing things the right way. And so, you know, not getting too high and not getting too low. You know, last year we came in, the first several games we lost, it was really frustrating. And we were looking at each other like how we really thought we were like onto something here. And you just have to stay in that like middle space, and you can't allow yourself to get too low. And just like this year, like we can't allow ourselves to get too high. And so kind of finding that balance and then creating that space for the staff and athletes to be able to stay in that balance as well has been a big point for me, because I like to win.
So. Yeah. During the, you can even maybe go back to the interview process, but certainly after your hiring, the conversations that you and Seb had about the kind of tactical, stylistic, on-field approach, philosophy maybe is the right word. What were those conversations like? What did he bring? What did he say he wanted to coach as a team?
Yeah.
What were you hoping to create as a tactical approach for like what the Seb Hynes, Haley Carter 2020, you know, Helen Enterprise would look
like? We were really fortunate because we were aligned. And, you know, when I was getting hired, like I had a vision and a DNA that I wanted for the club. And that DNA that I envisioned for the club was very aligned with what Seb envisioned. You know, like it is hard to play in Florida. It's hot. It's humid. It sucks. We want to take advantage of that, right? Like we want Enterenco Stadium to be a fortress. We want teams to hit a wall and we want to be able to go over that wall. And that mindset and it really imbues everything that we do. So how we train, we have a bit of an overload training culture. Like it's not for everybody. Like our training sessions are hard. The types of players that we recruit, you're going to have to be able to be successful in a hot and humid climate. And that's not for everyone. You know, the work ethic, right? Like we have a very serious blue collar work ethic among our team. And we talk about nobody being bigger than the club. And that's true of staff. That's true of athletes. It doesn't matter. So we're not going to recruit somebody who's going to make it all about them. And that means that sometimes we're going to forego or miss out on some of the top talent in the world, but we know who we are and we know what we want. And that's just, we're comfortable with that. From a tactical standpoint, how we want to play, you know, like it's possession with a purpose, right? Like we want to be attacking. We want to try and play through the middle. We don't want everything to be about transition, but we want to have transition targets, right? We've got an athlete like Barbara Banda who can play well in transition. She can get in behind. We've got several athletes that can get in behind. But then we've went and recruited players that can play in midfield that we can play through. And so we want it to be as versatile as possible. You know, and if you look at the athletes that we've signed over the last couple of years, like we really value versatility. And when you look into the future and you start talking about, you know, we actually have a pretty limited roster size. When you start adding in, we're going to have team 15 and 16 in, we're going to have a CONCACAF Champions Cup, you know, so trying to rotate your roster, you've got to have players who are really versatile. You've got to have at least like two starting level caliber athletes in every position. And we were aligned on that before I even walked in the door. I mean, part of the interview process was going through that. I'm sure that that's probably one of the reasons that, you know, they contribute to my hire. But so it was really easy for us. And in those conversations, like we built out relatively quickly what our DNA is and who we are, how we play, what a pride player looks like, how we build, how we support athletes. And that, like that document has been our like sort of guiding touchstone for all of the decisions that we've made. And, you know, we kind of accepted this mantra that like any influence or any impact to the player experience is an impact to our performance environment. Those are mutually inclusive things. And so every decision that we've made of things that happen outside of the game and in the facility, like that, it drives everything, like what the athlete's well-being and welfare, everything driven by that. So
I'm just having this thought now, maybe I'm off base here, but is the reason you guys have gone against the grain of aggressive counter pressure and like trying to win the ball back in the attacking third using this more structured zonal 4-4-2 mid block, is that because you expend a lot of energy to counter press and to do that in the Orlando weather might actually bring you out?
So I will tell you, counter pressing is important for us, but choosing when to counter press is the key.
Yeah, you guys know your triggers. Yeah.
Right. We know what our cues are for counter pressing. And what I really love about Seb is, and I laugh about this, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but broadcasters will appreciate this. Our broadcast lineup is always a 4-4-2. Always.
Yeah.
I will never, ever, ever send broadcast, because I'm the one who reviews it. I will never send broadcast a lineup other than a 4-4-2, and it drives broadcasters nuts. But the reality is half of the time, we're in a 4-4-2.
We don't have
the
ball.
So it's correct half of the time. That's right. Our out of possession formation very much usually is a 4-4-2. But it's flexible because some teams we want to play a high press against. And again, it's just adapting the cues. It's not necessarily adapting how we want to press, but we have the resources and the assets to adapt how we press too, if we want to do that. Because there's definitely been some matches this season where we've either sat in and it's more of a mid block, or we've hit with a high press and we've hit with three up front as a high press versus just a 4-4-2 in a mid block. So that, like, that's a testament, I think, to our athletes. And one thing that we talk about as a staff is we're very serious about our principles. So it doesn't matter what system of play we're in. It doesn't matter what formation. It doesn't matter how we want to press. Our principles always stay the same. And so, you know, like those cues on counter pressing always stay the same. It's just a matter of how we want to navigate. And then sometimes you want to bait teams and sometimes you don't. So, but the principles always stay the same. And that that's also been really rewarding to see the athletes evolve. Because I remember in last season, maybe midway through the season, I think there was a game against North Carolina, and you guys know North Carolina, the rotations through midfield are insane. And the players were looking to the bench, and so the staff are giving guidance. But after the game, we're like, guys, we can't always be solving problems for you in the game. Like, at some point, you're going to have to read the game and go back to your principles. Like, our principles are always going to stay the same. Like, we can't joystick you from the sideline. So from that point forward, we like really reiterated, like, understanding the principles and rely on those principles. No matter what a team is going to throw at you, we know who we are, we know how we want to play, we know what our principles are. And if you rest on that, then you're going to be able to figure it out. And I think you've seen that. Like, we've played against teams that have made adjustments at halftime or made adjustments 20 minutes into the first half, and then we've been able to account for it, which I think is generated or at least contributed to some of the success that we've seen this season. Yeah.
When you're thinking about a player in recruitment, maybe someone that you've identified and you are bringing it to Seb, yeah, or someone that Seb has identified and bringing it to you, what does that process look like? And for you, what is disagreement in that process?
So we have a director of scouting and analytics, Kat Connor, and we have talent identification scout. And sometimes people will come to us with some athletes, but for the most part, like, they scour hours and hours, mm-hmm, and hours of film, college film, overseas, youth, like, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. We developed what our position specific profiles are, mm-hmm, right? So we all sat down, Kat, myself, Seb, like, we know when we say we're looking for a nine, these are the attributes we're looking for. These are the statistics we care about. And also the great thing is Kat Connor was a college coach for a long time. And our talent ID scout is very much like computer science, data analytics, mm-hmm, like just like boy genius. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we like really work well to marry the art and the science of the game together, mm-hmm, because we can watch film and be like, yeah, that's not it. Or, yeah, you know, the data might not support this, but there's some serious potential there. Like, that athlete's a scatty athlete. We can work with that. Mm-hmm. But they will put packages together, and there's like tiers of like, oh, we're going to track this athlete and keep an eye on them. Oh, we should bring this to the Haley and Seb immediately. And usually, like, Aaron, our talent ID scout, will get together and present packages to the coaching staff, and we'll sit in a room, and then literally we'll just duke it out over, well, this is what I like about this player, but I don't like about this player, or I like this, and then, well, what about the climate? Would they adjust well in the climate? What would that look like? Or, you know, they play wide, can they play centrally? Or they can play centrally, do we really think that they could play wide, and is that really a position of need for us? And it's just... they're easy conversations now, because we just get in and they're fun conversations, because that's like the fun part of the job, like figuring out like who we're going to bring in and what's going to be next. But there, you know, there are some players and I will honestly, like, Seb and I don't disagree often. There are just times when I really have to get him across the line. Right? Like, I just have to get him to yes. And there, you know, there's some decisions I think that we've made that both of us are like, yeah, maybe that wasn't the most optimal decision, but, you know, but we've made that decision. We're sticking with that investment. We're going to develop and do what we can. But, you know, I just think there are times when, you know, and we'll call other people in, people that know the athletes. And, like, you know, obviously Barbara and Grace, we called Lisa Colin because she had worked with Zambia and wanting to know, like, what are they like off the field? And, you know the game well enough here. Like, would they be able to make the transition? And, you know, like, with Grace, is Grace going to be able to handle it? And Grace is, you know, coming back from her injury and is settling in really well. But it's a process, and it's several layers. You know, by the time athletes get to Seb and I, like, they've been pretty well vetted. Like, we think that this athlete could have a shot here. So Thank God for our scouting and analytics team, because it filters and formalizes all of our decisions. So
do you get the impression, and obviously, I mean, you got to mind your side of the streets, but do you get the impression that relative to some other clubs in this league, that your scouting and analytics department is A, pretty well sized and pretty well.
Yeah. So the league has done a survey, like staffing survey. And I will tell you that five teams have scouting and analytics departments. Four of them are the top four.
Yeah.
So the writing's on the wall. Like, it's part of professionalizing the women's game. Like, you're going to have to make those investments. And because the reality is, like, gone are the days of agents just reaching out to a GM or a GM, you know, or a head coach, you know, just finding an athlete on Y Scout. And like, it's moved beyond that. And I don't have the time to be doing that. Mm-hmm. And so we pay very good, very smart people to do that. And then track that talent and manage all of that and then bring it to us. And it's, like I said, it's codifying a process. And, you know, when you really know what you're looking for, like, we spent a lot of time developing those position specific profiles. We spent a lot of time talking about what is the DNA of a Pride player. When we're, you know, you talk about a basic four corner model, right? Like physical, like social, psychological, tactical, technical, what does that athlete look like? Just generally, regardless of position. We spent a lot of time laying that groundwork and then setting up scouting and analytics to be able to go and work their magic. So
let's talk about those four corners. So you mentioned, for example, you're looking for a number nine.
Yeah.
What do you need to see in those four corners out of a player more generally that can play for the Pride? And then let's just use the number nine as an example.
Yeah.
What was the positional profile? What are the attributes that you guys decided is required for a striker to play?
So, you know, the highlights, I think, of our like four corner model, right? When you're talking about like psychological, social, like we're looking for energy drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Like you guys know, like energy bus, right? Like we're looking for bus drivers. Like we want people who are on the energy train, blue collar, hardworking, humble, collaborative, growth minded, like they want to grow, they want to own their development, they want to own their contributions to the team. You know, technical and tactical, we need smart players, right? Players that can make those in-game adjustments on the fly. They're not necessarily having to be joystick, but they can see what's happening and adjust and evolve. You know, they have a really good understanding. They're students of the game. I'm on the technical side. Obviously, we want players who are scatty. Like we kind of laughed about that. That's Seb's word. Seven Giles, they use the word scatty, but you know, somebody that can be really effective in small spaces, but it also is very good at like move, action, move, can play a ball, move, receive a ball, and can get into little spaces. And then on the physical piece, this is a very fast, very physical league. And when you compare it to leagues in Europe and leagues overseas, it's much quicker and much more physical. Like you have to be able to handle the physicality of this league. You have to be able to handle like even talking with Barbara after the Gotham game, like Sam Hyatt bullied her. Mm-hmm. Like you got to be able to handle that. Like you got to be able to manage that. And if you're a defender, right? Like Emily Sams has got to be able to manage that. Corey Dyke has got to be able to manage Tim Wachowinga, right? So, you know, being able to handle the physicality and the speed and the pace. And when you look at the profile of players coming in, like I think that trend's only going to continue to be more dominant. And then, you know, specifically for a nine, you know, we want somebody who has confidence taking people on. We want somebody that can go one-on-one, just like we want our sevens and 11s, our wingers. We want the confidence. If you take somebody on one-on-one and you lose the ball, like we still appreciate the intent, because the intent is like you have the confidence and you want to take people on. You want to find goals. Somebody who is smart enough to be able to read space behind a defender and to be able to get on the blind side of a center back to find space in behind. Someone who's going to initiate their own runs as opposed to like just waiting for a ball to be played into space, but somebody who's going to manipulate space to then be able to run into a different space, right? And then someone who obviously can finish in the box, can get inside the you know, we call it like fox in the box, like somebody who can get within the width of the frame, and whether it's tap-ins or just junk balls, like find a way to get a goal. And like I said, then just the physicality and the pace. You got to have pace in this league if you're going to be in the front line. You got to have it. So
what about in the midfield? I mean, you guys did such a massive central midfield overhaul with Luana, Gautra, Angelina all coming in at the same time. What's the positional profile for an Orlando Pride midfielder?
That, to be honest with you, two things. Technically, you got to be able to turn on the ball quickly. You got to be able to play forward quickly. I think something that we struggled with in the past is like receiving on the half turn.
Yeah.
You got to be able to receive on the half turn. But the key focus for me for that position, for whether it's 6, 8, or 10, doesn't matter, is tactical awareness.
Yep.
Like being able to sit in pockets and take advantage of space in between a midfield and a back line. You know, and I think if you look, Morgan is exceptional at receiving the ball in the half turn and finding an outlet always. Like that's her key strength. Angelina is really good at finding space.
Mm-hmm.
She'll find pockets. And then obviously, like technically, she is very, very sharp, very clean. But Angelina's excellent at finding little pockets that she can get into. So Angelina's athlete, you can play as an 8 or a 10. Like she's either way you want to use her, you know. And then you look at players like Summer Yates, like somebody who's very explosive in a small space. She can play her wide. You can play her centrally. She can play as a 6. She can play as a 10. And it's because she's really explosive in these small spaces. So the big focus for us for midfielders is tactical awareness. Because if you can find pockets of space, you know, you get a little bit of grace on the technical side. Like we want technical sharpness and cleanness, but, and then defending, you got to do the work defensively. You have to do the work defensively. So, you know, you look at like Hayley McCutcheon and her ability on both sides of the ball. Obviously she's outside back that can play in a holding midfield position and vice versa.
Easily.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so she does the work defensively, but she also does the work on the offensive side of the ball when she's attacking. Like she will get involved in rotations with wingers. And so, you know, you have to have the tactical awareness and you have to do the defensive work.
Yeah.
I mean, we at ASA, we have a stat called G plus boost, which is measuring basically how good are you at like passing out of pressure?
Yeah.
You know, and how much better are you making the player receiving the ball because you're able to square it.
Yeah.
You've got two people closing in on you. And I'd have to double check this, but I'm relatively certain that Orlando is the only team in the league this year that had more than 3 players who were positive in that.
I will tell you, one of the stats that we track for the athletes is your first pass in transition.
Yep.
Right? Do you successfully complete your first pass in transition? And that's something, it's a very easy stat.
Yeah.
And it's something that they measure themselves as well because like
and players
we give them simple things. Yeah. We give them very simple things. Like XG, they're like, oh, it's kind of made up. But your that first pass and transition is so important. There's simple things that we track like throw-ins, right? Like opponent throw-ins, our throw-ins, the percentage that we maintain possession, the percentage that we lose possession. And we track, but that's one of our key stats is that first mm-hmm. pass and transition. Mm-hmm. Are you completing the first pass and transition? Because we find if you are doing well in that and you have a high success rate in that, you're going to find success.
And Lumke, I think, I mean, Angelina, in this stat that we have, there was nobody better in the league than Angelina.
Yeah.
It's like her and Izzy Rodriguez are basically tied at the top of the list. Like
that doesn't surprise me.
And I feel like either you or some other players have mentioned like that, one of the things that you wanted to try and change from last year or maybe years past was, let's just not lump it forward. Let's not constantly get it over the top. Let's try and play through the midfield. And it feels like Angelina has become maybe the primary node, at least from, you know, central areas for the express purpose of progressing the ball and getting
moving. Absolutely.
So you talk about the art and the science of just your job. What in your bio and what over the course of your life do you feel like has improved the art understanding your taste as far as
that is
concerned?
Oh my God, I watch so much football. Like I've been obsessed with football since I was a kid.
Mm.
Like I was one of the few kids that was watching Premier League when you had to have like an antenna and like tinfoil and like standing in one direction.
Like you.
Fox Sports World.
Yeah. And I think for me, like I love the game. Mm. I love the game. I don't care who's playing. I don't care what time it is. If it's on, like I'm watching it. And I think that has contributed, but also I surround myself with pretty good people
mm-hmm.
and that also are football fanatics and have really good conversations. I mean, like you guys do, right? Like where you can just debate like, well, I don't know that I see it that way. Like I don't, you know, and so I think for me, like there's nothing really in my bio per se, but mm-hmm. I watch so much of it and as a staff, we talk so much about it, even like not just our immediate team and things that are happening, but just things that are happening in the game and other athletes and other leagues and other teams. And so I think, you know, you just, you have an eye for it, right? Like And I don't know, I think maybe coming up as a player in the league and seeing how the league has evolved from the demands of a player and what a player needs to be successful in this league, like it has evolved. Mm. And, you know, the level of player that you need to be now to find success in this league is pretty high.
Yeah.
And so I think just having an understanding of that, having been in it, and I think helps.
Is there an aspect of the art of the game that you once held as a belief that you no longer hold as a belief about the game, or that your mind has been changed about over time as you've watched the game?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was a goalkeeper and I came up, you know, this isn't a recent evolution by any means, but I was a goalkeeper and I came up and I also love playing in the field. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to do it very often because my club team and they had one goalkeeper and that was what I did. In high school, I would get to do it, but I wanted to play. I loved to play. I wanted to play small side. So I wanted to be in the field as much as possible. And one of my strengths coming up as a kid was my ability to play with my feet. And now at the highest level, like if you cannot play with your feet, I won't spend any time looking at film on you. Like I won't. And I think that we're still seeing an evolution. You know, when you work with goalkeeper coaches are not spending enough time developing their athletes' ability to play the game. You are a footballer first and foremost. You are a goalkeeper second. And, you know, you look at some of the goalkeepers like coming out of the college game and like where they're at versus where they need to be with their feet. There is a massive gap. And, you know, at our level, like we don't have time to bridge that gap. So I think that that's one piece of sort of the art of the game that I've seen is, you know, we all used to laugh about Neuer, right? Like being insane and running to midfield to play. But like the reality is like goalkeepers need to have the skill set that Neuer has to be successful at the highest level. And that is massively different than it was in the mid-90s, late 90s, early 2000s, right? Like you could get away with not being able to play with your feet because more likely than not, you were going to receive a ball and you were just going to half volley it to midfield. But now, like, you have to be able to distribute, have to be able to be a resource. You know, like, you look at some of the best athletes like Kalen Sheridan. Kalen Sheridan plays as part of the back line. Alyssa Nair can play as part of the back line. Like, and so I think for me, like, that's one thing that's changed is that, you know, even when I was a kid growing up, like, everybody was like, oh man, you can punt the shit out of the ball. Like, that's amazing. But that's not actually now what is a valued like attribute. So I think no to goalkeepers, spend more time kicking a ball.
How do you think Anna's developed in that regard? Do you feel like that was a strong suit when she came into the league or is that something she's really?
Yeah, Anna, I think, you know, is distribution isn't, I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, she's like, I wouldn't look at her and be like, oh, Neuer. They're just different profiles. Yeah. But I think that her ability to find an outlet when we need to find an outlet has improved. I would say that her ability to play quickly and identify something quickly has improved. And like she does exactly what we ask her to do, right? Like she's really good at following instructions. So when we talked to her about, you know, we want to target this person or we want to try, this is how a team is going to press. This is how we want to bait. So this is how we're going to want to play out. And you need to be able to adjust to that. Like she has the skill set to be able to do that, right? And she has the trust and confidence of the back line and everybody's on the same page. And I think, again, another athlete who's not as comfortable with their feet is not going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. As a side note, her ability to side volley is exceptional. It's irritating how good it is. She can hit a side volley that's maybe 4 or 5 yards off the ground and you don't ever see her do it in a game, which I don't know why. I don't know why. I'm going to ask her that, actually. But, but, you know, she can, like, kick it into a trash can from, like, 40 yards away on a side volley. It's pretty impressive. So, yeah.
To go back to this sort of philosophical bedrock of positional versatility and having players who can be flexible and who are open-minded to that and willing to evolve their game, I mean, this year you have, what, at least two... Maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but I mean, Hanley McCutcheon moving from right back into midfield, Kylie Strom moving from fullback into central defense.
Yeah.
Some of these decisions are obviously injury driven because you had center back and midfield shortages at the beginning of the year. But when, you know, because you said in an interview once, like you expect an Orlando Pride player to be willing to accept the role that the coaching staff deems is best for them and for the team.
Yeah.
Even with the caveat of of injury-driven depth issues. Like, how do you know that Haley McCutchen is going to succeed in midfield? And that's the best place for her in this particular setup.
I mean,
or Strom moving
Haley,
to central defense.
Haley McCutchen obviously, like, came to us having played in midfield. You know, you look at her history, like her. But again, she's a good footballer. Mm-hmm. We want good footballers. You know, Kylie being able to move into left side center back was a no-brainer. Like, just because of her ability to block, her ability to 1v1 defend, her ability to play a ball over the top, her ability to find a short pass, play through midfield. You know, like that, though we are training athletes to be footballers first and foremost, right? Like, and so, you know, I think, and even if you look at Corey Dyke can play outside back, she can play center back, she can even play as a holding if we needed her to play as a holding. And so we scout players for that because we know, like I said, you're going to have injury-driven things, but we also want to try different things out. And Summer Yates is a perfect example. Summer Yates, anytime really we got her in last year, we had her playing in the midfield, but now multiple games we've had her playing out wide. And that's not necessarily injury driven. That's based on her performance and things that she's been able to do. The diagonals that she can play across are like chef's kiss.
Yeah.
So, you know, for us, it really is driven by being able to scout and bring in players that can play in multiple positions. They can play as a 7 or 11. They can play as a 10. You know, Marta can basically do anything that she wants. She would tell you she can't be a goalkeeper. I would agree with that.
But that's the limit.
Yeah, that's the limit. But I think, you know, yeah, that to your point, that is a foundational bedrock for us, is that we have athletes who, again, we rely on those principles. Those principles remain consistent, and they can play in any position that we think that they'll be able to fit into. And I think we found success with that. And we bring in players who are open to that, right? Again, that's like, it's not for everyone. Like, you know, somebody will say, and we've talked to players who are like, oh no, I'm a 6. I have to be a 6, or I'm a 9. And you're like, no, you should be a center back. Like, that's your profile. Your profile is as a center back. And they're like, well, that's not the position that I want to play. And it's like, well, this isn't the club that you're going to play at. So,
right.
Yeah.
It seemed like you were able to sort of figure out every position or find somebody to rotate into, except right backs was a pretty fluid spot, especially when Haley moved into the midfield spot.
Yeah.
Obviously, Brianna Martinez played there for a while. A couple of people cycled in.
Corey, Carrie Lawrence.
Yeah. Why did Corey Dyke essentially win that job coming
Bree,
out of
Bree, if you remember back, Bree had an injury.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bree had to step out for a little while. And we talk about when a player gets an opportunity, they got to take the most
of it.
That's
where I'm sort of getting at.
Right?
It's like Corey got the shot because Bree was down.
And she crushed it. And that's the environment we create, right? So now, like, Bree is working that she's got to work to get that opportunity again. Yep. And so it's just like Allie, right? We were talking about Allie before the interview started, Allie Watt, and she got an opportunity against Seattle. She goes in and had those goals. I have beef right now with the NWSL about offside calls and goals. But if some of those goals were not called offside, she would have had like 5 goal contributions. She went into that game and absolutely crushed it. I think it's probably one of the best games of her career. So she gets an opportunity to go in and takes it, grabs it, and now she's starting consistently on the wing and getting goal contributions, right? She gets a goal contribution against Kansas City, right? She gets them against Chicago. Like, so I think it's fun to see athletes take the opportunities that they get. And athletes know, if you get an opportunity and you don't take it, don't come into our offices upset about, you know, what happens next, because that, like, we're very serious about, there is no set 11 and everybody competes for a starting position, and we put the best team on the field. If we feel that you're the best team and the best person for that position on the day, you better own that opportunity, because the cycle process starts right back over again. So
you're one game away from the goal, from the ultimate.
It's wild. It hasn't sunk in yet.
That's a win or lose here in this final, and obviously winning would be better. What is this team in your mind looking like in 2026, 2027? Are you already, do you have your
we
mind
are.
There?
Yeah. So Seb and I, you know, 2025 is pretty set. Like, we're like splitting hairs. We're probably only going to have like one contract spout up. And even then, it will be filled probably before preseason starts. So, you know, it's, I have to tell you though, this offseason is going to be really short. So I am elated that my offseason is not going to be anything like last offseason.
Yeah.
We were hustling.
Yeah, no kidding.
whoo. But yeah, so Seb and I, like, we kind of work in 3-year cycles. And so yeah. we're planning out what we want things to look like 25, 26, 27. The thing that makes this planning for this cycle a little bit interesting is that, you know, there's a lot of changes, right? With the CBA and the salary cap, housing allowances are going away when you go from 26 to 27, but the salary cap jumps up pretty significantly in 27. So there's, you know, it's still a bit of a changing landscape. Mm-hmm. So you've got to plan and be proactive, but recognizing that there are some things that could change. And I have conversations with players who are like looking to extend and who I think we should extend, but that I'm like, I think we need to, I still think there's a little bit of uncertainty in the landscape. So, you know, we kind of work together to navigate, like, is it right now the best time for you to extend? Because we approach contract negotiations like we want to do business together, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, we want to keep you here, you want to stay here. Like, so how do we make this so that it's mutually beneficial for the club and for the athlete? Because I don't want to get into a situation where we've negotiated something now and then there's something that should happen as we kind of figure out this landscape over the next 2 years that could then negatively impact you or negatively impact the club. Like, we want to be in a place where we have a really good sense of what 27 will look like, for instance. And, you know, like, we're actually still waiting on the CBA has been ratified, but we're still waiting on the updated version of it to be final, right?
There's still,
yeah. Right? Like, yeah, yeah. We're all kind of waiting on
it. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, like, so trying to, you've got to plan out your investments. And at a high level, we know, like, we know what our transfer fee threshold is, right? We know what our salary cap threshold is going to be. We know what our roster size is going to be. So you can plan out investments and high investment players and your sort of like squad players. And I feel like we've got a good plan to keep things consistent through 26 and into 27. And then 27 will be sort of the start of a new cycle. But we are very proactive. I mean, yeah. While we've been in the off season, or not in the off season, but in playoffs, like, I've been ass deep in PowerPoint presentations, putting together our like long-term strategy, because you have to, like, that's my job, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's, I've got to lead that. So it's striking a balance. And of course, getting feedback from Seb while we're doing that, but while also like not, like, we have to deal with the task at hand as well. So
if your mind is already in the future, how are you dealing with being in the present?
I'm not.
Yeah. I'm like, we're not even going to ask you about Saturday.
What
do you expect?
You know, we were laughing about it before we came out, like, this, and I was telling you guys, like, our team cooks in chaos, and this week is chaos.
Yeah.
Right, getting here, like, the media demands, the just additional attention, like, families coming in and planning things, but it's good, because that's our like sweet spot. But I will say also too, like, I'm just so proud of this group of athletes and staff, like, regardless of what happens on Saturday, like, what we've managed to do collectively is exceptional. And we've even talked about that, like, we will be celebrating after the game on Saturday regardless of the result, because this group knows how special what they've done this season is. And it's a group of people, like, I get a little emotional about it. Like, we like really care about each other. Like, these athletes love each other, and the staff like really cares about the players, about each other. Like, it is a place. I don't know if you guys watched the team, the players surprised Seb with the coach of the year.
I didn't see that video.
I'll
find that.
I think Kylie almost got Seb. But, you know, to see the athletes really appreciate and understand like the difficult task that he was handed, right, as he became permanent head coach, and to go from where we were in 22 to where we are now. And it's just it. And she talks about like it being a place where people genuinely love to come to work every day. Like, I can't put it into words, you guys, like, how much fun we have. Like, it's criminal. I think probably. And we just are very, you know, we keep it casual. Like, it's like I talked about, we don't get too high, you don't get too low, you can't let the stress get to you. Like, we take it one day at a time and one game at a time. And yeah.
You just mentioning about creating a place where everybody wants to come to work and creating a really strong team culture. I heard you on another interview talk about how the Barber Banda transfer process went in that you deliberately did not use allocation funds to pay for that.
I did not.
So that you could
use salary buy down.
You could use that money for salary buy down. Mm-hmm. And I think you even made the quote that the Pride has the best paid roster in the NWSL.
We do.
So,
yeah.
Was that part of this strategy? Was that part of this philosophy about wanting to create an environment where people
you do.
Feel?
Yes. Yeah, it is. And you got to pay people what they're worth. And, you know, I think some folks might look at our roster and be like, oh, that athlete's like overpaid. Well, maybe.
Not in this league.
Maybe to you. But, you know, like we, yeah, it's just, it's this whole thing is funny to me because when the Angel City stuff came out and fans were like, oh, do Gotham and Kansas City next. And meanwhile, like I'm looking at the salary cap sheets every month being like, it's us guys. We're the ones spending the most. But what's important to note about our salary cap, if you look at our sheet, is a couple of things. Nearly every single player has excess benefits. I don't include it in the base salary. If we give them excess benefits like additional transportation stipend or additional housing stipend, it hits as an excess benefit just from a framing standpoint. So they know it helps them budget. This is your housing stipend. Use it for housing.
Yeah.
But also we have several high earners, right? So I call athletes who make over 200,000 like high investment players.
Yeah.
And we have three of them. We have several athletes that are just right below that. We have three or four athletes that are right below that. But what we've made a conscious effort to do is to not just raise the ceiling, right, for these high investment players, but to raise the floor as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about the amount that we're spending, because you can see other teams and the way that their spend works. They put a lot of investment in those high spend players and not as much investment in their like squad and role players. And we're not like that. If you look across our salary, the average salary is about $85,000-$90,000. And obviously that's accounting for you take the high earners out, but it's and that's just base salary, right? That's not housing and that's not transportation and that's not, you know, some of these other excess benefits. And we've made that a priority because one, I was in the league when the league minimum was like $8,500 a year. It was embarrassing. And I played for free because we had to have the amateur contracts. Yeah. And you know, like you want to pay players what they're worth and they feel value. There's like a value that's associated with that. But that being said, I also think, you know, I would be irresponsible not to mention that we still have to be responsible, right? We still have to be fiscally responsible with our funds. And, you know, when you look at allocation, you know, we've got, I don't write it a million in allocation to use up by 2026. And so I want to be responsible with them at 500 in 2025, 500 in 2026 cash flow. But, you know, it's a testament to our ownership as well that our ownership is willing to spend to the cap. They were willing to invest the allocation money because that's self-funded allocation money. And, but we also have to like still manage, like revenue has got to be meeting our expenses going out. And so it's, you still have to balance that, right, from a budgetary standpoint. But it is. It's us. Guys, we're the ones that spend more money than anybody else.
Given that allocation money is going to be going away soon, you got to spend down what you have. And with that acknowledge, and also with the acknowledgement that salary cap's going to keep going up and up, like, can you keep this strategy going in the long?
Yeah, I think so. But you have to, like, balance, right? Like, you can't just think allocation is all about high investment players, right? Yeah. Like, and I think, you know, we've kind of married it out a little bit when you look at 25, 26 going into 27. Like I said, there's a big salary jump between 26 and 27. It's a gradual, for us, I've set it up so that it is a gradual incline in that spend.
Mm-hmm.
But that allows us to account for not just those high investment players, which there will be more, like you have to rotate, right? But that allows us to continue to navigate that sort of salary average, if you will. It will allow us to keep that on a sustainable upward trajectory. And, you know, and then it's just the natural cycle, right? You have athletes, we've got, you know, athletes that are retiring this season and now you bring in young talent and it's just it's a cycle. It's a circle of life.
So last
salary
year.
Salary cap.
Yeah. So last year we had parity palooza basically in the league.
Yeah.
And this year, a very clear top four emerged.
Yeah.
Not only just in the table.
Do you remember what I said about scouting?
Yeah.
I'm serious. Look at the talent look at what Kansas City has done. I mean, I know Vlatko was all over South Africa last summer looking at athletes and obviously the work that Washington has done and Mark and Jonathan have done to bring in athletes from all over. And you look at New York and bringing in the U.S. women's national team minus basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the athletes that we brought in like that it comes down to scouting. And the ability to like close the deal. And in fairness, I think I will say this about parity. I think the other thing too is you had a lot of teams that were dealing with sales and their ability to transact was limited. You look at Seattle, right? Like Seattle's hands were tied. Like their ability to transact was severely limited. You look at like Chicago, for instance, severely limited. And so I think that those things have played into why we don't have the parity this year that we did. But then you also see clubs that are still trying to figure things out. And
I think what we want to know is everybody's taken notice, right, of what the top four this year has done, and salary cap is going up. CBA is creating new parameters. International transfers have far fewer barriers to entry to get into the league. Do you think that parity, like we have seen historically in the league, is going to return? And if the answer is yes, how do you keep, for the lack of a better phrase, how do you keep up with the Joneses?
I think you just have to continue doing what you're doing, right? So it's going to get harder and harder every year. And Seb and I talk about this. That's why going into 25, we're really splitting hairs over what our next contract. And it's like, do we want a developmental player that we know is going to be amazing in 26 and 27? Or do we want another immediate impact player? Yeah. And we have the time to figure that out. And we have the fortunate position that we're in to use that. But I think, this question comes up a lot in the context of the draft going away.
Yeah.
Right. And what does that mean for parity? And I have said this before, and I don't mean to be too cynical about it, but capitalism is a hell of a drug.
Yeah. No kidding.
And if you want the athletes, you have to make the investment. You have to make the investment.
So I had somebody said to me once, well, how is Houston supposed to sign anybody? Now I'm like, that's a Houston problem.
That's a Houston problem. Yeah. but here's the thing. Having been in Houston, Houston has facilities. They have an incredible stadium. They've got an incredible fan base. There are a lot of reasons why an athlete would want to sign in Houston. Yes, of course, they've got some off-field things that they need to work through, but they're not alone at that.
Yeah. No.
But, I think it's like you said, it's a club. That's a club problem, right? If you want to attract the players, you've got to make the investment. You've got to invest in staff. There's no salary cap in staff. You've got to invest in facilities. You've got to invest in support structures and programs around the athletes. You have to create a place where people want to come.
Yeah.
And let people know that you're doing that, right? You have to market it as well. When I first got to Orlando, we had our video team put together a marketing video for us that I could share with athletes so they could see this is the community. This is, these are the team housing apartments. Everything's taken care of. This is interviews with me and Seb. Disney, everybody loves Disney, right? So I think there can be parity because you have things like the salary cap. The salary cap will enable the management of parity, but owners have to invest, right? They have to be willing to spend the money.
I guess what I was really curious about is, as you plan for the future, are you planning for an environment with a sort of top four structure or a top five as we've seen right now?
I don't want that. I think it's boring. I don't think the fans want it.
No, I think that's right.
No, I want the parity of previous seasons to be, that's what makes our league great. That any team, and I actually still think this is true. I don't care what the standing said. I still think that any team in this league could beat any other team on any given day.
Yep.
The athletes in this league are just too exceptional. I genuinely believe that. And so, I think that there are just other things off the field that have to happen. But I will say you have to make the investment in the players. You have to go sign. And you got to sign the right players.
Yeah, no kidding.
They're going to find success.
Do you think Mark Wilf is kind of unique among owners in this league?
In what way?
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're pretty well supported by ownership, you and Seb. We all know the owners, either historically or maybe a couple currently, who do not have that attitude about their clubs. And when you talk about the scouting, I mean, you give the impression that there is like an infrastructural level of care.
Yeah.
That would not have been possible if owners weren't fully bought in.
Here's what I would say. You know, obviously, I don't work for other owners, so I can't comment on them. But what I would say is that the best thing, the thing that I absolutely adore about Mark and I just appreciate about our entire board is that they are professional sports owners with a generational ownership mindset. They have the history of, you know, managing Minnesota Vikings, right? And they are not what have you done for me lately people, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not only focused on wins and losses. They are focused so much on the people and the right fit and making sure that the people have the resources that they need to be held to a standard that they have set. And so they navigate the ebbs and flows of professional sports really well. And they create an environment and a space for us where we feel like we have, to your point, the infrastructural support to do our jobs. And Mark is a very savvy businessman. Like he understands the professional sports landscape. And I think the other thing that I really appreciate about him is that he doesn't pretend to be a soccer person. He doesn't have to be a soccer person. That's not his job, right? And it's our job, and he pays us to do that. And he listens when we give feedback and thoughts on what's happening in the global landscape, what's happening in leagues overseas, what we're seeing with players, the feedback we're getting from agents. He really, really relies on us for that feedback, and will adjust kind of his stance on things based on the feedback that we give him. And I love that about him. Like I've worked with so many people who think that they know it all in the game, and he doesn't even pretend.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's been a really enjoyable experience. And I do think that his experience in professional sports prior to coming into the MLS and the NWSL has made a huge difference. And like I said, that's generational ownership. They want to be involved and invested for a long time.
So do you really get an impression from Mark and maybe the Will family more generally that like when they bought Orlando City that the Pride weren't just like they're this tacked on?
No,
at, you
know, they've been committed from day one.
Yeah,
yeah, great. They've been committed from day one.
Who's going to win on Saturday?
Yeah.
Us.
What's the score?
That's a good question. You know, I feel like it's going to go one of two ways. It's going to be really boring. Or it's just going to be a goal fest.
Yep, talking
and
about
it's going to be like, it's going to be like 4-3.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Right? Or like 3-2.
The way that the semifinals went, which again, we thought these could be really attritional games and they weren't. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I feel like it could go either way. It's either going to be like zeros and penalties or just a wild goal fest. So.
Which would you rather experience?
I give the fans what they want. Give them a goal fest.
Yeah.
Give a goal fest.
As long as you're on top.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we're on top.
Are you?
No, but I mean, I would just want to see a good game. I appreciate Mark Kerkorian and all the things that he's doing in Washington, what Michelle's done, those athletes. Like we're all friends. And, you know, and I really respect what they've done there. And, you know, I'm like, whatever happens, happens. I know our people are set. I know our athletes are in a good place. I know our staff is ready. I know that we're prepared, but give the fans what they want. Like I would like to take a trophy home to Orlando, but I really care that this be a really fun experience for the athletes. They come out, they play their best, the fans enjoy it. Like, you know, I think for me, it's bigger than just this game. I I've said that, like these athletes and what they've accomplished this year, like nobody's going to be able to take away this season. It's one of the most special seasons in the history of the league. And they know it. And I actually think that that's like settled some of the pressure of this weekend a little bit, that they're like, we were ready to go into Kansas City. But I think we had all kind of told ourselves, regardless of what happened in the semifinal against Kansas City, we were like happy that with the season. And then we got through Kansas City and now it's like, let's go fuck some shit up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in the second half, you got two of the finest goals you will ever see.
Oh my God. Marta is so filthy.
Yeah.
We don't even have enough time to talk
so
about that.
So filthy,
goal.
You guys.
I think I said I dissociated.
I don't know if you guys know, but her mom flew into the U.S. that day. It's the first time her mom's ever been in the United States. Yeah. So she's very emotional that day. And I couldn't be more excited for her. But her mom and nephew are going to be at the game this weekend. And
yeah, it's great.
She's going to ball out.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, she put two of the best defenders in the league on skates.
Oh my gosh, you guys. I shouldn't laugh, but it was
quite something.
It was one of those like synesthesia inducing goals where you're just like, tastes and colors are also happening as I watch this thing.
Yeah. Somebody did like an art, like cartoon of it. Have you guys seen it on X? Somebody did a cartoon rendering of it, and I've watched it even a few times.
We're blue sky people now.
Yeah.
I know. I made the jump. I've only got like 5 posts, but I made the jump.
You'll get there. Haley Carter, VP GM of the Orlando Pride. Best of luck on Saturday. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
That was Haley Carter, who we are forever indebted to for allowing us into her frigid hotel room.
It's hilarious that these people give us their time.
But we try not to shame ourselves with our questions, but you know, you can't win them all.
It was incredibly enlightening. I hope you guys learned a few things too. I know that we did. In the meantime, there's going to be a ton of content from us coming at you over the next few days. We will have another bonus main feed episode previewing the NWSL championship, as well as our Patreon bonus episode where we'll be talking with the analytics department of the Washington Spirit, which is going to be a very cool conversation. So stay tuned for all of that. In the meantime, you know what to do. Rate us, review us, follow us, rate us 5 stars if you're going to rate us at all. Tell all of your friends about us. If you have any friends left who you think would be interested in the show and don't listen yet, follow us on social media at XOwnGoals. That's the letter X Own Goals. We are a blue sky family now. If you believe we've made an own goal, email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com.
If you write us a review on Apple Podcasts and it isn't horribly nasty, we will read it on air.
Yeah.
So please let us hear what you think.
Yeah.
Talk soon, guys.
Bye-bye.